My name's Edward, I'm an addict. My story, I suppose, in one interpretation is about a really angry, unhappy, miserable individual coming to understand that there's other ways to engage with the communities that I live in. You know, I grew up in a really angry household, and you know, my parents responded to everything that they experienced by becoming angry and violent, and I mimicked them entirely. I didn't know that I'd done that, and spent most of the first 40 years of my life denying categorically that I was anything like either my mother or my father. Came to understand when I was around about 40, 43 or something, that I was still the image of them. I was just as angry, just as raging, just as critical, just as complaining as I had remembered them being. And the relationships, well, the kind of relationships I had at the time, to a reasonable degree, reflected the kind of relationships I've seen my parents have with each other and with friends of theirs. They were combative. They were unhappy. They were full of name-calling, spitefulness, revenge. And it's not like that today, for me in any way. My initial drug of choice was tobacco. I then progressed through all of the cliche drugs, marijuana, LSD, amphetamines, and finally onto heroin. I've used most of my life. I used my opinion to base my understanding of the truth, and my opinion for most of my using was that it was okay. I don't try to rewrite how I understood my history while I was experiencing it. The last 2 years of my using were entirely miserable, and you know, there's nothing I could do to change them. And as a consequence, I ended up finding NA and coming along and discovering a new way of approaching my life and the way that I communicate and participate with other people and myself. I suppose, you know, one of the critical periods in my using was when I was about 19, completely frying my brain on LSD and coming to after a weekend of heavy acid use and kind of knowing what my name was because my friends were calling me by my name, and knowing what kind of cigarettes I had because I had a packet in my pocket. And I spent the next 7 or 8 years kind of experimenting, trying to find develop myself as in my own understanding again, because I had no idea who I was anymore. I'd just lost touch. I don't know what happened with that information, but it wasn't available to me anymore after that weekend. And I asked my friends and I asked my siblings and my parents, and none of them seemed to notice anything having happened. I was fucking completely and utterly fried. And all of my life, you know, I've copied my father in a bloated and overvalued understanding of my own opinion, and that carried on right through my using. And particularly my drug of choice was amphetamines. And from way back when I was a young boy, I was I used fantasy to develop and enjoy any particular part of my day at any particular time, whether it might be to get to sleep or to try and cope with the violence that occurred at the meal table when I was growing up. Just under any circumstance, fantasy became a really important tool for me. And of course, you know, amphetamines was perfect. It accelerated the fantasies that I experienced, and it firmed my understanding of the importance of my opinion, because I had so many of them after that. Eventually, you know, what kind of brought me to my knees was, you know, the kind of three things. A relationship I was in had kind of collapsed, and I was sentenced to prison, and my veins had collapsed also, and you know, I probably could have ignored the relationship collapsing, and one way or another I probably could have, well, I didn't end up going to prison, but I probably could have ended up, I probably could have managed it in any way, although I don't know that to be the case. But there's no way under this, under the sun, that I was going to manage with collapsed veins, just not under any fucking circumstance. You know, my I didn't know at the time, but I found out afterwards I was just as addicted to injecting drugs as I was to the substance themselves. I was, you know, to get stoned, I needed to use a lot of liquid, a lot of fluid, and I couldn't do it with collapsed veins. And I, you know, so, you know, part of the misery of my rock bottom was heroin. Always hated the shite. It always made me feel really angry and hostile. So, and you know, I was kind of coming from a baseline of being angry and hostile in any way. So, just kind of magnified the characteristics that I engaged in my world with. And yeah, it was fucking horrible those last 2 years. And there's, you know, there's nothing I could do about it. You know, I did my best continually over those 2 years to try and force some change somewhere. And I couldn't, there was nothing I could do, nothing whatsoever. I couldn't stop using. I couldn't do anything to get any more money to try and get better drugs. So I was using on my benefit every fortnight. I would have some enough money to get stoned for the day. And then I would scrounge around getting enough money for benzos and whatever pills the doctor would give me. And, you know, no friends, unemployed, you know, living in a dive. Blankets over the windows, you know, a black, a 12-inch black and white TV without an aerial, you know, eating rubbish, and you know, I didn't know anything else could occur. You know, I'd never known anybody that had had not used drugs, and you know, I was never really interested in other people's opinions. And my opinion at the time was that things would be okay if something would just change. And so I just kept striving to try and find change. And I was tricked by a counsellor. he told me that there was a detox down the road that had a manageable using program. So I liked that idea, you know. I went down there a couple of days later. And well, actually, between seeing that counsellor, deciding to go to the detox, an acquaintance, a relative to me, a really big angry man, came around and wanted me to set my dealer up. I'd been scoring for him for a little while, and I refused to do it. In the process of beating the living shit out of me, I was stabbed. He was about to tear some teeth out with some pliers before he was disturbed by somebody at the door. He'd found a hammer that he was going to use on me. You know, the dissociation that I had from my emotions and my spirit at the time, and for a long while after that, it took me about 10 years to start experiencing any trauma over that that violence. Over being treated in such a fashion, and you know. It's one of the joys of recovery now to be able to have those kind of sadnesses and griefs, to be able to experience disturbing feelings for things that it's legitimate to be disturbed by. Went into detox, and I can't explain what happened, but it was suggested that there was another way to approach life, and I just decided to try it out, and that was in 1991. Subsequently started, you know, I decided I would try it out and that I would listen, I would pay attention to the kind of suggestions that was put to me, and immediately started resisting the staff. Went into combat with everything that everybody suggested, and I was horrified by the idea I might need to go to a long-term rehab. But I did, and I didn't know it at the time, and I didn't know it for many years, but, you know, one of the core principles of the first step of doing things no matter what I think or what I feel was evident in my behaviour, even in detox, because I didn't fucking feel like going to rehab. Not, there wasn't a single, even really small feeling in me that felt like going to rehab, not one. You know, there was nothing in my reasoning that could help me to understand any kind of benefit to go to rehab. but I went in anyway. And part of the reason that I went, probably, well, as far as I can recall, the only reason I went was because it was categorical to me that that my only other choice was to go back out and use. For about the last 10 years of my using, I don't know what age I was, but I remember consciously when my using, at one stage when my using accelerated, I kind of took myself aside and I thought about the lifestyle I was living, and I literally decided that I would live the life of a drug addict. I liked the way that I was living. I wanted to use the amount of drugs that I was using. I liked the things that I was doing to maintain my drug use. And I decided to live that way and proceeded to do so for the next 10 years or so. And so going into detox, it was no, you know, the first step was put to me and it was like a no-brainer for me. I'd been identifying as a drug addict for over 10 years. And so fortunately for me, you know, I didn't have to kind of struggle with that. And, you know, the second half of the first step was evidenced by the misery I was experiencing over the previous 2 years. You know, I didn't kind of have to think about the fact that where I had been living was a shithole. It was right in front of my face, you know. I didn't have to think about the fact that I was in detox because things were really fucked and there's nothing I could do about it because it was right in front of my face. The evidence was there and it didn't bear questioning. So I just kind of shrugged, you know, I just kind of got on with stuff and spent 11 months in various rehabs in Sydney. you know, really angry still. I didn't know it at the time, but because, you know, part of my opening up in the program has, you know, included things like coming to understand that I was really fucking angry and that I maintained that the energies that I experienced by my behaviours on a daily basis. You know, I embraced the program wholeheartedly. Unfortunately for me, I didn't know, once again, I just didn't have a clue that being a really angry and quite a hateful man, while I was taking the suggestions on, while I was doing the, while I was performing in the program the way it was put to me, the way I heard other people engaged with it, in fact, what I was doing those things hatefully. You know, I'd used drugs most of my life to change the way that I felt, to change my sense of who I was and my sense of the world that I lived in. And I did exactly the same with the steps for, you know, well on 10 years. And it took me that long to come to understand that that the literature says that the program is the engine of change, not me. So I used the steps to find information out about myself. And I used that information to crucify myself continually for over 10 years. And, you know, part of my, I understand now that to be my self-hatred towards myself. There was no way that I was going to let myself alone just as I was. My sole emphasis was on changing who I was. I would use the steps. I would use meetings. I would use sponsors. I would use friends. I'd use any element in the program whatsoever to change the feeling that I had if I didn't want to have that feeling. If I wanted to make the feeling stronger or weaker, I'd use the program. If there was something about myself I didn't like, something about you that I wasn't happy with, I'd use the program to try and change it. And I don't do that anymore, you know. I spent most of that first 10 years interpreting, working on my opinion on what the program was, applying my opinion on what the steps were about and not paying any attention whatsoever to the traditions. And as a consequence, my role in, but not so much in London, but in Sydney, my role in the fellowship was incredibly divisive. I just did nothing really to develop the unity that that my recovery depends upon. I just wasn't able to act lovingly and caringly. I just didn't know how to do it. I didn't know that that I could feel angry and still act patiently. I didn't know that I could feel ashamed and yet still stay present and available for myself or other people. My understanding and my way of engaging with myself and the world was that as soon as I had a feeling, I would act on it exactly the way the feeling was. That if I felt angry, I acted angry. If I felt ashamed, I acted ashamed. If I felt sad, I acted reflective of that emotion, and or however a particular emotion inspired me to behave. You know, same kind of thing with my opinion. Just, you know, really fixed on the understanding that my opinion and the truth were the same thing. In spite of the fact that they're both in the dictionary on completely different pages. You know, and, you know, I've been hearing people for years talking about dictionaries, and, you know, I never kind of fucking bothered to have a look in one, see whether there might be a fucking difference between what my opinion was and the truth. But, you know, around about 10 years clean, I just kind of, I encountered a second rock bottom. The first rock bottom that brought me into recovery was clearly the most important I've ever experienced. The second rock bottom was, you know, incredibly joyful and liberating. It was a second stage. Well, it was a second incredible event that, in fact, kicked my spirit open. You know, I came to understand that I worked, another fellow and I in Sydney, he was in a similar place, and he had been encountering similar things in the fellowship for a number of years, the same as I had been, which was that he had been working the program as avidly as I had been, and he was stuck also, and he had been stuck for a number of years too. And we started working the program, we started experimenting with the program differently from how we had applied it before. We were both analyzers to the extreme. One of the things that we came to understand was that we had both directed our programs towards changing ourselves, and we came to understand in that process that I only want to change things that I don't like. And in directing the program towards myself in a process of change, I was in fact saying that I don't like myself. And I I'd never realized that in all of those years. Coming to understand that, I started to use my different senses to try and come to understand my world differently. Instead of just my opinion, practicing just looking at seeing what we were looking at and listening to what we were hearing and trying to learn how to not use our intellect at the same time. What I came to understand was that when I just looked at myself without using my opinion, I seen that invariably on any given day I was an honest man, I was courteous, I was available to people. This, you know, these things were evident when I started looking, even though sometimes I lied on occasion, even though sometimes I was unfair or called somebody some sort of hateful name on occasion. You know, I might do something for 3 seconds of any given day, and for the rest of the day I would be constructive in the communities that I participated in. Yet when I was only relying on my opinion, because I was so immersed in self-hatred, my opinions would always clasp on that tiny little fragment of my day and totalize a judgment of myself as a piece of shit. You know, I found that I couldn't rely on my opinion anymore because it was too driven by self-hatred. You know, when I started listening to the kind of things that I thought towards myself, I was horrified. I found that I was thinking every second of every day and not paying attention to the things I was thinking about. I found that I would hardly pay attention to the things that I said. When I started listening to what I was thinking, I found that my day was full of horrible names, was full of incredible criticism, unfair judgment. It was relentless. I was relentlessly pursuing myself, and you know, I'd often find myself, when I started listening to what I was saying, I would often find myself stopping mid-sentence. I'm wondering what the fuck I was saying that thing for. And it was clear to me when I started, you know, going back through my, there were the kind of things that I'd been saying for many, many years, you know, things that seemed to be inoffensive, but they were in fact full of hatred and and generating an unhappiness in my life. And you know, some of the stuff was really simple. Some of it was much deeper and much harder to come to understand. You know, so I started to learn a different language. I started to take all words of judgment out of my language. I started to take all words of criticism out. And, you know, my language hardly involves that stuff today. You know, about a year into this process, in looking at how I behave, about a year into this process, I heard myself say one day, somebody said to me, "Oh, hello, how's, it's nice to meet you." And I heard myself say, "Yes, it is. It's nice to meet you too." And when I heard myself say that, it was immediately apparent to me that in my spirit, I understood clearly that it was fucking nice to meet me. And it was important. And that it was important for me to acknowledge that. And I'd never, ever understood my own value prior to that time, not on a conscious level. You know, I always understood that I would have value when I accumulated things or when I changed things. And now I understand that my value is entirely existent upon my existing. That's all. Nothing else need happen whatsoever. As a consequence of that, I feel there's so much less demand in my life today. I don't feel judged today the way I have for most of my recovery, most of my life. I don't feel hated. I don't feel disliked. You know, Sydney, I would often hear about the black hole in people's spirits, and people would often refer to it as the God hole. And when I started staying with myself, when I stopped abandoning myself, when I stopped criticizing myself, when I stopped demanding that that I start being somebody other than who I was, I haven't had that. I don't feel that hole anymore. I don't know what the fuck happened to it. My sense is that it was being caused by me abandoning myself, that I was ripping that hole in my spirit every day by refusing to pay attention to myself, by refusing to act valuably towards myself. What I seen in my life up until that time was that I behaved towards myself the way I would behave towards people that I don't like. Impatient, demanding, I'd call myself names, I wouldn't give myself a split second to do anything, completely unfair with myself. And so to try in an effort to try and find a different way to behave, because I didn't know how to behave differently. You know, I thought that I was loving and caring, and I had loving and caring feelings, but I just wasn't acting that way towards myself in particular. And so I started to look around the rooms and look around other people, and I started to look at what other people do in expressing love and care. And it was really quickly apparent that what other people do in their actions, which is what the program talks about, our actions, to express love and care, is exactly the same as what the fellowship does. People make themselves available, just like the rooms do. People are patient in expressing love with each other. I don't call people that I love awful names. I don't judge. When somebody that I love and care for comes to me with some stuff, I don't judge them. I don't tell them to hurry the fuck up. I don't tell them to snap out of it. I don't tell them anything except I'll stay with you as long as you need me to. And when I started looking around and I seen there was just this common set of behaviours that people exhibited to express love and care. Didn't really have anything to do with the way that they felt or what they thought. It was evident in what they did. And so I just mimicked those people, and I needed to learn how to mimic that stuff towards myself. And this is where the traditions initially came in incredibly importantly for me, particularly an element of the 12th tradition, is that I just got to ignore my own personality and act on the spiritual principles, because my own personality wants me to act impatiently when I feel impatient. My own personality wants me to act angrily when I feel angry, and I just need to stop fucking giving any value to those aspects of my personality, because I don't want to act hatefully anymore. If I don't want to act hatefully, I need to discipline my own fucking behaviour. I just need to. You know, I spent 45 years as an angry man. You know, it's not that stuff isn't leaving. I was disciplined to be an angry man. The program tells me that if I apply the steps, I can learn new disciplines. The new disciplines are based on loving and caring principles, principles like acceptance, humility, courage, open-mindedness, being present, being available. So when I engage with the first step, as an example, what the first step allows me to do is say, well, you know, I'm Edward and I'm an addict, and it doesn't fucking particularly matter anymore. And the evidence for that is in the unmanageability of my last 2 years. You know, the second step tells me that that don't get too fixated on any particular opinions on what a power greater than myself is. Just keep coming to an understanding and let those understandings continue to come. Don't get fixated on your own opinion about anything. Don't make your own opinion the truth. It's not necessary to have the truth in order for to have an understanding of a higher power. Third step tells me that you know, just go with that understanding for the time being. If it works, okay, good. If it doesn't, connect with other members and develop a different understanding, but keep having a go. Fourth step tells me to just write a simple list. Don't explain anything about the list. Don't justify anything on the list. Just name things, and that's it. Just name them. No judgment, no criticism, no justification. None of that stuff. The fourth step doesn't ask me to go into those tangents. For me, those critical, those judgmental tangents. Fifth step, tell somebody about it. Tell your higher power. So for me, the fifth step for me is coming along and sharing at meetings. Sixth step, write into the list. Seventh step, tell somebody else about it. Ask for some help. The eighth step, write into the list. Ninth step, by that time, I'm already learning to become loving and caring through the practicing the spiritual principles I've been learning in the steps earlier. So making amends for me is acting lovingly and caringly. Making amends for me isn't going up to people and saying to them, look, you know, blah, 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 blah. Making amends for me is whenever I see those people, just as much as whenever I see anybody, I'm acting lovingly and caringly in accord with the spiritual principles in the literature. So my personality it can be seen to be making amends to the way that I behaved in the past. The only way I know to develop unity is by acting in accord with the spiritual principles, not in accord with my personality. Because my personality is not really all that interested in unity. It just fucking isn't. Unless I discipline it, it just goes off the rails and I end up on my own. I end up calling you fucking shitheads. I don't fucking want anything to do with you. I just want to do my own thing. For me, there's not a lot of unity in that kind of attitude. You know, I just can't let myself run automatically. I have to be paying attention and I have to be acting with discipline. 10th step, take another list. Don't do much about it, just pay attention. 11th step, do what you like, do a bit of meditation. Whatever it is that you feel gets you in touch with your higher power, do it. 12th step, come along and share about your message. All of it for me is a reintroduction to myself. All of the steps to me are paying attention to who I am and as a consequence getting a better understanding of who I am. Through that process, learning how to practice the spiritual principles that the literature talks about, and as a consequence, coming to the 12th step with a fairly good set of disciplines around the spiritual principles, now having a pretty good idea of how to act patiently, no matter how I feel, being available for whoever it is that might need some support, doesn't matter what I think about them, to be able to do those things in spite of my own personality. For me, I understand that my recovery is premised on the fellowship existing, and as a consequence, the first tradition tells me that it's my if I want to have a life that I'm interested in, then the fellowship needs to be at the center of the universe, not me. That my interests and my goals will be met if I support the unity that the fellowship depends upon. And the only way that I can do that is, as I said earlier, by coming along and doing what the spiritual principles tell me that I need to do in order to participate in producing unity. It's no good me coming along here and shoplifting, you know, me coming along to meetings and just taking. It just doesn't fucking work. I tried that for a few years and, you know, I ended up with no friends in the rooms. I ended up, you know, not being all that attractive or popular. As a matter of fact, I kind of still have that reputation in Sydney. The way that my spirit has cracked open in the last 4 or 5 years happened almost subsequent to leaving Australia. I am, you know, I'm now a much more caring and loving human being. Most of the time that is evident for me in my emotions and in my spirit and in the way that I think about myself and my world, but it's most evident in my behaviour, and that's really all that I care about. You know, I've been able over the last 4 or 5 years to take the value away that I previously gave to my emotions and my thinking and to put it on the way that I behave. The people that I most respect and most admire anywhere and everywhere are the people that I see doing particular things. I mean, I don't know what your emotions are when I see you acting generously. I don't know what you're thinking about when I see you, you know, picking up the chairs or picking up ashtrays at the end of meetings, and so giving your time. I mean, I haven't got a clue what you're thinking or what you're feeling, but I admire those kind of behaviours. I admire what I can see. If I want to promote the unity and the fellowship that I need, I need to be doing things that people are attracted to. No matter how I think or how I feel, I just have to be doing that. Thanks. You know, I come in Sydney, you know, where I initially learnt about sponsorship. You know, I learnt that the primary role of a sponsor is being available no matter what. And, you know, once again, it took me over 10 or 11 years to come to understand that being available no matter what doesn't mean finishing phone calls really quickly when I don't fucking feel like talking to my sponsee. You know, it just doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean imposing my understanding of the fellowship on somebody else. It means being available to another person and letting them develop their understanding of their higher power and supporting them in their understanding of it. It means letting them develop their understanding of the application of a step through listening to other people sharing at meetings, through listening to my experience with the steps, through listening to whatever they listen to, and me being available to them in their own understandings, not trying to force my stuff down anybody's fucking throat so they can become me. It's not my understanding of being a sponsor. I mean, you know, interestingly, you know, the only time in Sydney, the only time I ever heard about sponsees being sacked was when, you know, when they were relapsing to such a degree that that they'd become a danger to their sponsors, in the sense that, you know, there was just no fellowship being involved. And, you know, I've got to tell you, I'm a little bit mortified by how many sponsees I've experienced being sacked here in London. I fucking hear about it all the time, and I just don't understand it. You know, sponsees being sacked after 1 week in a relationship with a sponsor, being sacked after a month. You know, sponsees not wanting to accept a particular understanding of a higher power and being sacked. I don't fucking understand that stuff. It doesn't seem to me to be availability. It doesn't seem to me to have any kind of acceptance or fellowship in it at all. I say that kind of stuff because of how incredibly supported I was by sponsors that I had. Incredibly, you know, because I was such an angry man that, you know, those men must have, they must have suffered painfully, because there was no way I was giving them any joy, not under any circumstance. You know, the primary key for me today in developing my program is my listening skills. You know, I used to think that you know, wisdom was made by the person speaking, and as a consequence became dependent on just another form of dependency on chasing around particular speakers, and, you know, want to listen to him, don't want to listen to him, want to listen to her, don't want to listen to her. And I now understand that that the more open my mind is, the less my mind is cluttered by my own opinion, the more available I am to listen to the things that people actually say, not to my opinion. And as a consequence, you know, it's the importance of my listening skills has become critical for me today, because, you know, my experience over the years has been, there's been many occasions where I've heard, I've remembered things that I've heard in the past that I don't even remember hearing. But when I've remembered them, they've been critically important pieces of information to me. And it's happened so many times now that it's there's no doubt in my mind that I haven't got a fucking clue today when what somebody is saying is going to be valuable to me in the future. As a consequence, it's really important for me today to be listening without having an opinion on what people are saying. Otherwise, all I'm going to remember in the future is my own fucking opinion. And it ain't enough anymore. My opinion is just not enough anymore for me. I've become a much warmer, a much softer, much gentler, a much more available man as a consequence of doing what the earlier speakers spoke about primarily, which was just fucking coming back no matter what, and allowing the program to work change over me. Thankfully, I stopped trying to force change on myself. It's been a pleasure and an honor speaking here today. Thanks very much. Thanks.